first for today, let's do any last minute review that you might want to do on amino acids. So since I see a few more faces than I think I did in the morning, I'll again state that yes, the Merrifield resin synthesis, and along with it therefore Bach and hydride, that's the diterpenyl dicarbonate, and the DCC also will be part of the lab exam. I have not announced that any other topics are going to be moved to the lab exam, so your presumption should be the remainder of those topics listed on Tuesday, you do need to study for tomorrow. From that list of topics, does anyone have any questions? In your studying, has anybody come across any questions that you might have? As soon as I hit stop on the microphone, will there be 5 or 10 of you that come up with that? Oh, I'm Dr. Gray, I've got just one question. Because if you did, you might as well ask it now for the benefit of everybody else that might learn from the answer. No? Then, again, let me explain or give context to the people that might not have been here this morning. We do have a final exam that's coming. I'm quite aware of that. As I was describing this morning, previous quarters of 10-12C have been caught off guard by the final because when was the last time we talked about using dibal to reduce an ester? Or when was the last time you heard the phrase transesterification? Or when was the last time you wrote a mechanism for the saponification of a nitrile? Those are just 3 things I happen to think of that could easily be questions on the final. And as you'll see, there's a whole list of topics that if I were to read them all off right now, you'd think, oh, crap. Because we haven't done this stuff in weeks, and one class in particular, I hadn't done the traditional, here's the list of topics we did for the quarter, because I figured, okay, they know what we covered. And then I walked to the final exam, it's like, oh my God, I forgot about that mechanism. Oh, good grief, he did. And they couldn't really be mad because it was stuff that they had learned during the quarter, but they were mad that they didn't think that they needed to go back and study it. So we're doing a review for the final today so that you've got the time to prepare. Next week, anything other than specific questions about this material, anything other than that, any new information will not be on the final. It's purely just going to be for informational purposes. That's going to apply to the lab, because again, for those of you who haven't heard yet, there won't be any more lab experiments this quarter. We're still going to be doing checkout on Thursday. I have an idea of how to try to make that go a bit more rapidly, because we then have the lab quiz on Thursday as well. But I want to leave some of Thursday to do review or to complete some of these extra topics. Now, if you are a quick thinker, you're probably doing something along the lines of this. So there's no more lab, and whatever he's lecturing on is not on the final. Therefore, I have a week vacation. Right? That's the math that some of you just did. So I'll put it this way. Yes, of course, there are going to be these recordings that will get posted. Yes, I have just said that information won't be on the final. However, as long as I do pull it off well enough, we're going to be covering at least terpenes and other biomolecules, lipids, and wanted to get around to DNA. So I'll be studying over the weekend those topics so I can make sure that if we're canceling the lab, making all this room, it's a worthwhile lecture I'm going to be giving. Many of you are going into the bio field, so presumably this discussion would be more interesting to you. If not, then it's your choice whether you want to come or not. But think of it this way also. If whatever career you're going into, you had to take O-Chem for some reason. That means you have to have some knowledge of this. And whatever field that you're going into, you need to have some interest in. Otherwise, you're just going to be miserable 20 years from now. If you're just going into a field because your parents tell you because it makes lots of money, then 20 years from now, when you can't stand it, what are you going to do? And even within your field, you say, oh, I'll learn it later. Well, when is that later going to come? Because if you don't have some interest in what you're doing, you know, what's the point of any of us being around at all? You create your own interest. You push yourself forward. So if you don't come, you don't come. If no one's here, I'll lecture to the board. But consider whether or not coming might be beneficial to you, might provide the one little bit of interest out of the whole year of OCHEM that you sit back and go, oh, and actually intrinsically learn and are interested in something. Is that enough of a preamble? Shall we review the final topics now? Question? I want to do the checkout Thursday. I was initially going to try to do a partial checkout today, but our stockroom manager's not here, and they don't like doing just partial checkouts anyways. So Tuesday's going to be lecture or review. So final exam, which is which day, by the way?
Tuesday.
I forget. What time is it? Is it 9:15? I forget. 11:30? Okay. It's written in the syllabus. Whatever's there is correct. I just don't remember without looking at the moment. We have carboxylic acids and derivatives. So, subtopics of that, and this list I'm about to write down, I came up with yesterday as I flipped through the notes and flipped a little bit through the book. We have the relative reactivity of carbonyl compounds. Which I expressed it that way because, yes, we have these different carboxylic acid derivatives, the acyl halide, anhydride, carboxylic acid, ester, amide, and nitrile. I don't think nitrile we threw into that mix, but the rest of those carbonyl-containing compounds, we talked about how inductive effects, resonance effects, and hyperconjugation effects can affect reactivity. There is also, of course, the set of enolate reactions we learned this quarter, where we talked about reactivity of carbonyls there. So lumping that all together is what I mean by relative reactivity of carbonyl compounds. If we're restricting ourselves now to carboxylic acids and derivatives, you need to know cationic, which generally means acidic, versus anionic, which usually means basic, mechanisms. Of carboxylic acid derivatives. Of course, in this discussion of these different mechanisms, came up the idea of reversibility. So that, remember, because of the nature of an acidic mechanism itself, generally acidic or cationic mechanisms tend to be reversible. Basic mechanisms, it depends on what the base involved is and what it's attacking. If there's a substantial difference in the basicity of what you start with versus what you end with, then you'll be effectively an irreversible reaction. If what you make is about the same basicity as what you start with, then you can have reversibility. So that's what I mean by this topic here of reversibility. How does it relate to these cationic versus anionic mechanisms? There are some examples that I'll give of these different mechanisms. So one of the first one we talked about was acid-catalyzed esterification and hydrolysis. Again, a cationic or acid-style mechanism.
Along with that, we also talked about saponification. And at the same time, we talked about diazomethane. That's because
carboxylic acids, being acids, cannot do the types of reactions that you might expect with bases that other carboxylic acid derivatives might be able to undergo. So saponification was a way of going from an ester back to carboxylic acid, but we didn't have any standard way to go from an acid to an ester, not by the type of a tetrahedral intermediate forming attack that we did with virtually all the other mechanisms. To just show there is such a thing as one case of making an ester under base conditions, that's where we learned diazomethane.
Now there's a series of other reactions we did, and we talked about some of these in both their cationic and anionic forms. So there's, I already mentioned hydrolysis. There's solvolysis, which that's another word for esterification, but technically you could do solvolysis with things other than carboxylic acids. We had alkylation and reduction. So in other words, if we use a Grignard reaction on an acyl halide, what happens? If we use a Grignard on a carboxylic acid, on an ester, what will be the potentially different results from each one of those substrates? Here I mentioned reduction, so let me add a note that you should still know what dibal and I'll write it out. This modified reagent used for acyl halides. Now, I need to go back and actually check the text, because I think during the course of the quarter, I've used two different structures at this point, having T-butyl groups like this or having isopropyl groups. Both of them would, theoretically at least, do the same job. I'll need to look up and see. I'm guessing it's the T-butyl that should have been the one I was referring to all the time, but I will verify. We did have a discussion in the context of carboxylic acids of sodium borohydride versus lithium aluminum hydride. Oh, yes. Oh, I did forget an aluminum, yes. You could draw it through to the oxygen, yes.
That's supposed to be what? That's what I said. I need to go back and verify what the structure should be. Now, as far as the sodium borohydride versus lithium aluminum hydride, I'm not going to ask you why are they different. That was a 12B topic. But you do need to know that sodium borohydride will reduce aldehydes and ketones even if you have esters or other carboxylic, less reactive carboxylic acid derivatives around. You need lithium aluminum hydride in order to be able to reduce esters or carboxylic acids or amines. Technically, sodium borohydride does work with acyl halides. So if you had an aldehyde and an acyl halide in a coffee cup, then you will be able to reduce both the acyl halide and the coffee cup, though, the ketone or aldehyde that you might have as well.
Let's see, what other things do we have? You might remember my predilection for lactones and lactams.
I seem to remember particularly reductions being something that I discussed because you get different products as to whether you use, aside from the fact you have oxygen versus nitrogen, you get different kinds of structures if you reduce a lactone versus a lactam. Due to the difference in their mechanism.
Separate from those, we did also talk about nitriles. In terms of types of problems, very similar to what we did in the first quiz and exam, where you'll have obviously mechanism problems. There'll be synthesis, but no more complicated in terms of difficulty or number of steps than what we already did on the quiz or exam. So what I mean by that is last quarter, we might have done more elegant multi-step syntheses. This quarter, I was just focused on plowing through the material, making sure we knew the reactions, but we didn't come back and do a lot of elegant syntheses. So the same types of shorter syntheses that we did, same type you'll still run into again. And of course, there's everybody's favorite, the fill in the blank. You might have some form of theory problem. For example, I never did come back and ask a question on a quiz or an exam about why the different carboxylic acids or derivatives have different reactivity, did I? I never did come back to ask that question, even though we talked about it a lot. Did I? It's one more topic I left out here. I'll just throw it in. I think I said it earlier. Need to know this idea of transesterification. That, for example, if you have an ester that you want to do a reaction on, and you used a base, you have to be careful what kind of base so that you didn't change what kind of ester that you had. Now, standard disclaimer, I might have forgotten to put something on the list. You have this semester, quarter's notes. I have this quarter's notes. Even if you didn't ask the question, I'm going to go back later and figure out, oh yeah, I forgot to mention that. So don't think, aha, he forgot it, he can't ask about it now. Nah, 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 nah. It's not quite like that. Question about carboxylic acid derivatives, though. Okay, then the next scary bit. Enolates, which, yes, you need to know the pKa values that you still need to know previously. What do I mean by that? No, you don't have to memorize amino acid pKas, certainly. But you need to know that a dialdehyde has a common alpha pKa of 5, aldehyde ketone 7, diketone 9, ketone ester 11, diester 13, aldehyde 16, ketone 19, ester 25. Same numbers that you had to know before. And why? Why are those numbers all different for those different compounds? Which is actually related to the reactivity of those compounds. So if I wanted to save space on an exam, could I think of a question where I'm going to ask both at the same time why pKa values are different and the reactivity is different for different carbonyl compounds? I don't know. We have cationic versus anionic mechanisms. The only one we did as a truly lecture topic was alpha halogenation. Of course, under certain conditions, under basic conditions, there's this variation of the alpha halo halogenation reaction, which is the halo form reaction. Technically, many of these different condensation reactions that we learned could have acid or base versions. But I clearly remember that we put only the acid version on a lab quiz this quarter, correct? We did not actually have the cationic condensations on lecture exams, nor did we spend much time discussing them at all in lecture, other than to know how could you form an enol under acidic conditions, which you would need to know for alpha halogenation anyways. So what I guess I'm trying to get at is the reaction I'm about to list, you technically, for the final, only need to know the anionic versions of. These include things like the aldol, or mixed aldol reaction. We have the Claisen condensation, which involves esters, the Diekmann condensation, which involves making cyclic esters. We have Michael additions. There's the Robinson annulation, the Stork enamine synthesis, and don't forget about alpha alkylation, the fanciest version of which was the malonic ester synthesis. Now, later I'm going to list the Gabriel synthesis for synthesis of amines. Remember, though, that we have the thalamidyl malonic ester synthesis, which is where we combine the malonic ester approach and the Gabriel approach to give us an alpha amino acid. It appears to me that this is an even more logical place to combine two questions. If I wanted to ask about the malonic ester synthesis and the Gabriel synthesis, why not do it through the thalamidyl amino synthesis? Right? What else do we have? Seems like there's one small topic in there. If not topic, then we have type of questions. Which in addition to potentially having a theory question, you know, why does alpha halogenation only make one halogen under acidic conditions versus multiple halogens in basic conditions? We did discuss that. I don't think we had a question on that difference, did we? So aside from that possible theoretical question, we did have a type of problem where I gave you a product, you had to figure out the two molecules that could have made that product, or the type of reaction that could have happened. So remember, we had four or five different molecules in one or two different problem sets where one of them was made by Claisen condensation, one of them was an aldol, one of them was a Michael. That same style of problem you'd need to be able to still do. So when given a product, determine the reaction and substrates used to make it. Ah, there was something back up on the carboxylic acid section. So, which day was that been for your class, though? Let me look. I believe it's May 8th, but let me verify. Would help if I look at lecture. Ah, no, your class, it was on the 10th. I've written this item out, stability of polyfunctional carbonyls. What I mean by that are things like carbonates, carbamic acids. Remember, there's certain types of carboxylic acid derivatives that are thermodynamically unstable. We take advantage of that, in fact, in the Bach anhydride, protecting-deprotecting sequence. So I'm referring you back to this
page of notes so that you can go back and review which compounds, which types of carboxylic acids do tend to spontaneously thermodynamically decompose.
All right, so now we have amines. That same day, the 10th of May, we talked about 9 different ways to synthesize amines by doing a SN2 reaction of alkyl halides, which we discussed how it was unsuccessful, usually, but could be exploited in order to do the Hoffman elimination. We talked about reduction of alkyl azines, hydrogenation of nitriles, reduction of amides, reduction of imines, very related reaction, reductive amination, Gabriel synthesis, which I mentioned a little while ago, reduction of nitro compounds, and then we have the Curtius and Hoffman rearrangements for which you have not yet written mechanisms. We have the acid-base properties of amines.
I'll just declare you don't need to know the pKb values of these amines or the pKa's of their conjugates. Gotta be sneakier to the photos, you know.
But we did talk about, for example, why is there a difference in the base properties of a non-cyclic, fully hydrogenated amine versus something like aniline, which has got an amine next to a benzene ring, versus something like pyrrole, in which the nitrogen is actually part of the ring. Or, you know, come to think of it, why not even something like imidazole that's got 2 different types of nitrogens? It would have 2 different pKb or conjugate pKa values. So you might want to review your acid-base properties. Let me add a clarification to this. So those 9 ways of making amines, including the Curtius and Hoffman rearrangements. Then we have carbohydrates and amino acids.
Which, you're about to take your amino acid exam, so we've already reviewed for that. It's not that long ago we did all the carbohydrate chemistry. I'll just remind us, we didn't have any questions about the Fischer proof on the carbohydrate exam. There's your final. When I write the final, I'll just look at this.
So if you do forget something, it won't matter anyway, it won't be on here.
These are not the droids you're looking for. Now, we have 15 minutes left, which we used in the other section to fix a very bad presentation I did on chiral auxiliaries and on... Oh, yes, the whole methionine cleavage. Did anybody want to have any discussion of either of those 2 topics? I'm not trying to say they're on the exam. I'm trying carefully back to not say what may or may not be on the exam. I just know that we spent that time in that way. So, offering that. I'll open it back up then to amino acids in general. I know that lots of people this morning, which I know you also had time this morning to study, so that might be why you don't have questions right now. But a lot of people were getting concerned about the Edmond degradation. So I'll just, if you weren't here right when I started this class, I did send out a handout by email that specifies the five structures you should know from that process and the names of three of them. I strongly suggest you learn those names. I'll put it in United Nations language. I suggest in the strongest possible terms that you read those. At this point, we're kind of out of material because whatever I am going to do with lipids and terpenes, we'll do next week. Yes? Fridays. Well, tomorrow we have the exam, so yeah, we don't actually have a lecture tomorrow. Yes? Okay. Yes? And I wrote the other version of the neutral structure there. But I learned the error of my ways of writing those non-ionic structures. So what Yasemin is referring to is on May 31st, where I first, one of the early discussions about the graph showing the different acid-base forms of an amino acid, that was at a point where I was still writing neutral amino acids, not in their sphingoionic form, but they're in their truly neutral form, which I've now learned makes things confusing. So what I wrote was correct, but not using the structures I've now learned I should have been using. So just to clarify, L-alanine has three forms. And presently, this is how I would represent these three structures. I would use the sphingoionic one in the middle instead of the one that I had on May 31st's notes. You quoted two pKa values, which one of which was 2.34, one of which was 9.69. These halves that I'm writing here refer to the fact that at pH of 2.34, half of the amino acid would be in its cationic form, half would be in its sphingoionic form, and at 9.69, half of it would be in its sphingoionic form, half would be in its anionic form. Now let me ask you this. At pH 10, what is the predominant form of L-alanine? Notice the word predominant. Is it completely in its anionic form? No. What if I had a pH of 6.2? Well, the pi of this compound is 6.02, the average of the only two pKa values. If I was at a pH of 6.2, not 6.02, what would I have in solution? More anionic than cationic, but effectively neutral, because the majority of it would be neutral. Does an amino acid have to be converted 100% into a cationic or anionic form in order to perform electrophoresis? From not going to answer that question. There's a very, very, very logical answer, but I just want to bring up the point that in our discussion of electrophoresis in class, I kind of made it sound like, here we have a cation, here we have an anion. Does it have to be 100% in its cationic or anionic forms? In the example I did in class, were the molecules in 100% cationic or anionic forms? Think about that. Yes? And let me talk about that. Let me just get to your question. The anhydrin. We can't add that before. Like while you're doing the column, until it leaves the column, you cannot add anhydrin. Because the only reason that compounds get separated on the column is because of their differential behavior towards the ion exchange material. Anhydrin removes the difference between the different amino acids because it makes the same complex with whatever amino acid you throw at it. If the whole point of chromatography is to separate compounds, but you've made them all equal, it won't work. So you have to wait until after the material comes off the column, then you can use an anhydrin. That was your question, right? When do you use it? So you use it after it comes off. Other questions? Yes? Not for the exam. Only for the lab quiz.
So basically means we don't need to worry about polypeptide synthesis.
Not polypeptide synthesis, no. Sequencing you're still responsible for. Other questions? Yes?
Yes. I never did say for you not to know all 20 amino acids.
I see the wheel still turning. It's like, no, that's he said what he said, which is he didn't say anything. That's right. Any other questions? You're all ready? Should I just pass the exams out then? You're ready? I will be leaving right after class, so if you have that one more question that you're dying to ask, you've got 8 minutes now within which to ask it. So again, do we have any questions? Yes? You can write it whichever way you want. But I'm suggesting that in the long run, this is the less confusing way to write. And it is more truly what's in solution, you could say. And it's in the book. Well, if there aren't any more questions, then I guess... ice problems! No, there are not. Ice problems are 1B topic. With that amino acid? No. It could be any amino acid if I give you the numbers.